From the National Humanities Center, this is Wayne Pond with Soundings, conversations featuring scholars and visitors at the National Humanities Center.
Let me tell you about one of my films. I went to live with the Tarahumara Indians community north up in Chihuahua, very close to the American border. And upon living with them, when I shot the film, I discovered and decided to use all these very, very primitive instruments, musical instruments that they use, and the film in the country of the Fast Runner, that's the title of the film, the Mexican composer made a whole track for the musical score with these Tarahumara musical instruments and following the pattern of the Tarahumara music.
Okay, let's listen to just a short example of that. Welcome to Soundings, Cinema in the Third World. That's the topic this week on Soundings. My guests are two recent visitors at the National Humanities Center, Marcela Fernandez Violante and Gorham Kindom. Marcela Fernandez Violante is an award-winning filmmaker and director of the School of Cinema at the National University of Mexico. Gorham Kindom is chairman of the Department of Radio, Television, and Motion Pictures at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Here is Gorham Kindom.
I think we need to distinguish between what we might call third world cinema on the one hand and what some critics and scholars have called third cinema in the third world. By third cinema in the third world, they mean the types of films that are produced which are different from classical Hollywood types of films, as opposed to those that are imitations of classical Hollywood films that happen to be produced in the third world.
Mm-hmm.
Now, once you've made that distinction, you begin to see vast differences, it seems to me, between third world films or third cinema in the third world and the kind of films that students are used to here.
Mm-hmm. Marcela, because of the fact that you teach cinema, that you have a very successful track record as a filmmaker, does that move you, even though you are a Mexican filmmaker, does that move you out of the third world? Do you think of yourself as a third world cinema artist?
Well, in fact, I think most real artists would think of them as universal thinkers, as universal philosophers, but in fact my films have more to do with what Hap said. I am a third cinema director in the third world, because most of my films have a trend to analyze social issues and they end in political, being called political films, although they are not necessarily political.
Do your films always focus on political or ideological or moral or national themes? Is that one of the identifying characteristics that we could attach to this term third world cinema?
Well, that would be the same characteristic we would attach to Greek drama poets and to Will Shakespeare, wouldn't we?
All right. Well, now help me with that. How do you draw some parallels that that may not be so apparent?
Well, I think it's because I was brought up in the National University as a filmmaker, and being exposed to humanities during 5 years of the career makes you a very conscious person and very responsible in the use of the media. So as a graduate from the National University Film School, I feel at ease researching and writing my scripts precisely on social issues because I feel my country.
Well, now let me see if I can pick a fight here with you on this. Do you, is there some arrogance here? Do you think of yourself as the conscience of your country?
No, that's not an arrogance. That's being humble.
It is being humble.
Yeah.
All right.
Someone has to do the talking, and if I was gifted, with communication skills and abilities, then my obligation is to use that those gifts for my community.
Who are your, I don't want to use a strong word like enemies necessarily, but who are your critics? Why would people oppose that sort of an impulse in the making of films? Who are the people that say mean things about you, and why do they say them?
Well, they don't, but I assume they think them. That must be the commercial private directors that want to do a lot of money and that want the society to remain the same, that they would like to continue with this unjust situation for the whole of Latin America, that would make a lot of money with the ignorance of the people.
Hap Kingdom, let me draw you into the conversation. Do we have, is there a necessary tension between wanting to turn a profit, to make money, as Marcela Fernandez-Violante says, and being conscientious as a filmmaker?
I think that has been applied to Hollywood cinema as much as to the Third World in terms of this old conflict between money and art. In this case, we've added to that the social concerns, political concerns. To me, it's a matter of being honest, in a sense, making explicit what is implicit in every film. In every film, there is some degree of politics, some degree of ideology, some degree of attitudes or values. And what I think the third cinema in the Third World does is to make that political statement, or that is implicit, to make it explicit,
and to do it deliberately. Let me give you an example. We had a film in this country a few years ago called Norma Rae. Sally Fields played a young textile worker. Now, the film obviously was very sympathetic, to oversimplify here, to the left, to labor. And yet, my sense is that was, it was a wonderful film. A lot of people enjoyed it. It enjoyed, you know, good success at the box office and all of that. But it didn't necessarily raise a political furor. Now, suppose you made a film like that, Marcela Fernandez-Violante. How can we measure the difference in reaction between Mexican critics, Mexican audiences, and the kind of thing that occurred here in the United States? It was just another movie. Or was it?
No, it wasn't just another movie. It was a different movie. It came through the audience. In Mexico, we saw Norma Rae, and we consider it a very important movie because those are the minorities that never appear in films. And it happens also in Latin American countries, to speak about the worker, to speak about the peasant. Those are the only opportunities that we have a chance as middle classes to look at the conflicts that this group of people or this class have to struggle and to try to solve. I think that's why film keeps on forgetting that it's the most popular media, well, the most popular art. And tends, especially in certain countries like Europe and the US, to talk about middle classes' problems. And they keep on ignoring the vast majority of the minorities, if I could say that in correct English. And that's why I think it's very important for people to look at many, many different films. The problem is that there are very few where they could see the many, many difficulties that of those social classes that they don't have a chance to deal with.
Tell me, who are the objects of your concern, your scorn, your contempt, your affection as a filmmaker?
Well, I don't think about message, because I think that the film should convey not only one way of reading at the film. It should convey different ways of reading at the film. It should also communicate the pleasure of looking at a beautifully made film. But I think that if I could tell people, if I can communicate with people, telling them how much angry I am because of this society, the way it behaves, the way it creates so many injustices with people, if that could pass through the screen and get into the audience, I feel rewarded, because finally I could create a tension between the audience and the screen. But I actually, there are a lot of issues, and I think what Buñuel used to say, Luis Buñuel, lived in Mexico, that this is not the best of our society, that we have to struggle to make it mm-hmm. more humane, more livable for the rest of the people, not only ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Hap Kingdom, tell me about some of the methods, the forms that Third World, Third Cinema filmmakers have used to depart from, one of you used the term or something like it, you know, the classic Hollywood model. Are Third World Cinema filmmakers, are they necessarily mavericks, formally speaking, not only in terms of the substance of their films?
I'm not sure I'd call them mavericks so much as, because the term maverick, in a sense, suggests that they are unusual to some degree. To me, they're speaking very directly from their culture, from their society, about mm-hmm. that culture mm-hmm. and society. So they're very much within, to my mind, the mainstream of that society. What they differ from is something that is outside, that is external, and that is a Hollywood cinema, which in a sense dominates the world's screens in terms of exhibition, mm-hmm. And which they have to fight against for the exhibition of their own films.
Mm-hmm.
Stylistically, I think the films differ considerably from Hollywood-type films.
Be specific for me. Okay. Give me a specific example.
First of all, I would say that one of the characteristics of Hollywood cinema is a focus upon individuals and individualism. Now, this is accomplished through a variety of ways, but the Hollywood films try to promote identification of audiences with individual characters. Most of the story...
Hollywood does this, okay.
And most of the story is connected by the psychological motivations of individual characters. They're after some kind of goal, they want to solve something, and the implicit ideology at the end of the story is that an individual can accomplish something.
Mm-hmm.
The whole stylistic fabric is one which tries to immerse the audience into this kind of seamless world of reality where the individual is seen as the natural controlling force.
Not only that, but you have what? Beginnings and middles and ends. You have resolutions that may not conform.
Resolution is another aspect. Uh-huh. There's a strong degree of what we call closure
yeah.
to the narrative.
Uh-huh.
That is, that loose ends are resolved. The audience goes out with this feeling that everything's right with the world, that all problems are solvable.
What Herman Melville called our fatal American optimism. How about this, Marcela Fernandez Violante? How do your films differ from the kind of thing that Hap Kingdom has been describing? You want to be a gadfly. You want to make people not unhappy, but uncomfortable with this other model of the cinema. Have I got that right?
No, but I have a lot of sense of humor. I'm not that solemn.
Okay.
How do you say it?
Well, solemn.
Solemn.
Sure. Yeah.
No, I enjoy when they laugh a lot because I think it's the easier way to get them this way.
Well, how about these issues that Hap Kingdom raises of seamlessness, beginning? I raise the issue of the beginning, the middle, and the end, questions about resolution. Tell me, for example, about one of your films and how you would handle questions like that.
Well, I think in terms of a structure, mm-hmm. I also have to use the same traditional structure, beginning, development, and conclusion. The thing is that my main worries as a film director are because when I was younger, the third world cinema or the third cinema of the third world was considered that it was impossible to look at, that it was lousily made, that it mm-hmm. had no quality. Then since I knew that was a good way of rejecting our cinema, I tried to use the old formula of this kind of dramatic structure
mm-hmm.
and use it for another goal, that was to talk about different issues, mm-hmm. social issues. For example, when I made my first film, De Todos Modos, Juan Te Llamas, I was...
Translate that for us.
De Todos Modos, Juan Te Llamas means whatever you do, uh-huh. you lose.
Okay.
So when I made that film, I was impressed by Macbeth's tragedy. I had read it very often. I had a course in Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought to myself, what if I combine Macbeth with Hamlet in a Mexican situation? So I combined two tragic heroes, mm-hmm. one because of its ambition. The other one, because of its loyalty to truth and to justice.
You have a violently cerebral
and
movie.
And I made two military people in the film destroy each other. Mm-hmm. So that's the way it happened. I used classical Shakespearean way of telling a story, although with a great difference, a great gap, because I'm not so as talented, as genius as Shakespeare is, or was, but still is for me. And then I tried to combine all that with a collective war, that's a Cristero war, that's a Catholic war that we have in Mexico.
This is something that continues?
That happened really, no, it went it's as back as 1926.
I see.
And also with the presidential succession, do you say? No, well, the new president was going to take power, and it was one of these military people. So a whole combination of collective forces, individual forces, tragic figures, because they were so ambitious in one way, and they clashed between each other. And then the peasants were clashing against these people. So it made a very strange picture, a very strange film.
Who criticized that movie? Did you get heat from the church, from what, the military establishment? What were your concerns? Were there any concerns as you were making a film like that? Did you try to second guess your critics, as it were?
No, I was worried that in most Latin American films, no priests and no armed forces appear as main characters.
Are you anti-religion, Marcela Fernandez Violante?
No, I'm not anti-religion. I have a problem with people that use religion as an excuse for not being ethical. That's my main worry. I'm not anti-religion. I'm anti-injustice, because even if they are priests, I don't mind if they are Catholic or Protestants. They are human. And sometimes they keep on forgetting ethically what their way of dealing with society or with people that believe in them should be.
Hap Kingdom, is that a universal, is that a monolithic thing that third world filmmakers would be, what, united around themes like that? How might they differ among and between themselves with respect to themes of justice, the role of religion or the church in a society, economic power, the haves, the have-nots?
Well, the situation, or one specific situation that comes to mind for me is, that I've done some study of, is the West African situation and the films of Ousmane Sembène.
Certainly not a household name here.
Not a household name.
Give me 15 seconds about that.
Ousmane Sembène is a well-known filmmaker in West Africa and Senegal specifically. He was known as an author of literary works prior to that. He'd spent some time in France where he'd worked, and then he was trained as a filmmaker in Moscow. He returned to Senegal and decided to use cinema as a means of reaching larger masses of people than could ever possibly be reached through French language literature, which was the only written language up until very recently in West Africa. Now, in terms of religion, which was your specific question, one of the messages or themes or ideas that comes out of his films is that there are outside religions and there are native religions. And he's not necessarily, it seems to me, or the films don't suggest that there's total opposition to outside religions such as Islam or Christianity in this region, but rather when they serve as forces of oppression, as colonial forces that suppress the native indigenous religions, then they are negative forces. And that's some of what he depicts in his films as part of the repressive nature of colonialism.
It's is it or is it not, Hap Kingdom, an irony that you are describing here, a filmmaker who was trained in Russia? Do we come from that with a necessary ideological tinge to his films? It strikes me as an irony. You're telling me here, as a filmmaker who is basically supportive of indigenous religion, spiritual impulses.
I don't think we have. We try to paint these things in terms of either or.
Right.
That is, the filmmaker is either for us or against
us. Yeah, let's get around that.
The filmmaker is either associated with the Soviet Union or he's affiliated with the United States. And I think that's somewhat fallacious. What we're really talking about is somebody who is willing to pose alternatives to both the classical Hollywood model and, let's say, the Soviet or Eastern European model that is indigenous to his culture or mm-hmm. her culture and society, and to develop a film language which helps to express that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in a sense, rather than going and looking in their films for the influences of the Soviet Union or the influences of the United States upon it, we should be going to their films looking for what we can learn about it to apply to our own cinema.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the Hollywood film, we're used to a fast-paced film.
Yeah.
We get this partly out of commercials and television as well as, but the classical Hollywood film had about a 7-second average shot length.
Yeah.
The films of the Third World have, in a sense, made necessity the mother of invention.
Invited us to slow down.
By virtue of their, short production schedules
yeah.
and their low budgets, they have to shoot things with longer takes. One of the results of that is that instead of being wrapped up continually in action and motion and bouncing here and there, you have to slow down and think about what it is that you're watching and what it is that you're doing, and mm-hmm. you begin to focus upon things beyond emotion and to think mm-hmm. while you're watching films, which I know sounds very foreign.
Oh, Lord forbid that you try that with an American television audience. Yeah. Hap Kingdom, tell me about the two documentary films that you have made about the Chuck Davis Dance Company. You traveled in Africa and shot some film, came back and made some documentaries here in the United States. How might those films differ, for example, in the concerns that you have as a filmmaker vis-a-vis the sorts of things that Marcela Fernandez Violante has been describing? Are they as overtly, political or ideological? How do you parallel and differ with her artistically and thematically? Help me with that.
Okay. The documentaries that I have made, documentary is by itself slightly different from classical narrative films.
Structurally. Sure.
But beyond that, there's still a sort of an implicit realism in mm-hmm. in our standard or classical documentaries, this notion of objectivity and that we are somehow neutral perceivers of other worlds and that we can create, again, another seamless world right. on film where we're not aware of the fact that this is a construction, that somebody has produced this. In the film I made called Chuck Davis Dancing Through West Africa, there are conscious attempts to make us aware of the fact that this is a construction. For example, there is a shot of a crew member who's also a dancer, and we pan over and we watch her take off her headphones and lay down the microphone and hand it to someone in the village while she gets out and dances in the circle in the center of the village.
Now, why specifically would you include a shot like that? I mean,
well, one, she's an excellent dancer.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it was one of the best shots. So, I mean, that was part of it.
Mm-hmm.
This was Jane Desmond, who was my co-producer on the film. And the other is, I think it shows us that as filmmakers, we are participants in this. We are not neutral observers. We are people behind the camera, behind the sound recorder, and we're out there recording.
And that, I take it, would be a crucial difference.
No, I wouldn't make too much of that.
Uh-huh.
But
no, I mean by comparison with Hollywood films, which...
Well, you rarely, if ever, see the fact that this is a construction. You
sure.
maintain that seamless world that this is something that is just produced. It's out there. It's happening. It's real.
Yeah.
You're witnessing it. It's not that somebody has chosen this and decided to show you this and that. But beyond that, at the end of the film, I tried to intercut footage that we shot in Africa with a performance back here, both so that people could see the relations between African dance, traditional African dance in the village, and what Chuck Davis and his companies try to do in this country
mm-hmm.
Through this cross-cutting and seeing the similarity of movements and knowing where they came from. But also because I made these as seamless as I could so that people are forced to sort of jump out of the film and recognize that we're changing time and we're changing place. And again, this is a constructed piece of work.
Let's conclude our conversation. Hap Kindom from the University of North Carolina and Marcela Fernandez-Violante from the National University of Mexico School of Cinema. Tell me briefly, where do you want to see third world cinema go? What ideally should happen with third world cinema? Marcela, let me begin with you.
I would like to be shown all over the world, not only in film festivals, because the same people keep on going to the same film festivals, although it's necessary. We need awards, we need recognition, we need people to know about what we are doing as filmmakers and about the production of all the filmmakers throughout the third world. What we need is that people will, as Hap said, watch these films and discover what other peoples believe in and are doing to survive, to overcome their conflicts, to make connections with other peoples. I think the problem right now is that the lack of funding is somewhat destroying the big production that we have in the third cinema of the third world. I would also welcome any ideas of improving the possibility of making more and more films and having African films come to Mexico, opening the possibilities for all other Latin American countries to be shown in Mexico, not only the U.S. Commercially made films, but all the alternatives that can be given for this product.
Hap, let me put the burden on you to wrap this up. How might that happen? Is Marcela Fernandez-Violante, is she having a pipe dream here about the
I was going to answer your question by saying I wouldn't presume to tell third world films or third world filmmakers where they should go, but I know where they should come, and they should come here, and I think it's not just in their interest, it's in our interest. It's in our interest to listen to the third world, to hear what they're saying, to see how they see the world, so that we can interact with them better than we are now.
The program is Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. You've been listening to a discussion about cinema in the third world. My guests were Marcela Fernandez-Violante of the National University of Mexico and Gorham Kindom of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. For a cassette copy of Soundings on Third World Cinema, send $3 to the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, 27709. Soundings would like to hear from you. The address again is the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, 27709. Next week on Soundings, another in a series of discussions about the bicentennial of the United States Constitution. My guests will be John Wilson of Princeton University, Stephen Conrad of Indiana University, and Michael Curtis, an attorney and legal historian from Greensboro, North Carolina. Until next week, this is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Support for Soundings comes from the A.J. Fletcher Foundation and from the National Endowment for the Humanities.
Listen to Soundings. This is Kim Nielsen at the National Humanities Center, inviting you to join Wayne Pond this week for a discussion about cinema in the third world. Wayne's guests are filmmakers and scholars from the National University of Mexico and the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. The diversity of cinema in the third world, its cultural and political insights. The topics this week on Soundings from the National Humanities Center on this station.